So today's show, we have congressional candidate Gareth Rhodes on the show today. Very excited about this. He's going to just give us some of his campaign. We're going to get in depth on a lot of things, and we're just going to bring out his personality.
Before anything, Gareth, I got to give you the clap, man.
Yeah, it's a tradition here.
Tradition, yeah. And again, the call-in number, 518-828-0290. Slay, it's your interview. I'm backing you up, bro.
All right. So I ran a campaign myself this summer, and I understand the rigors. Not at your level, which seems like, you know, a total different animal. So I wanted you to just talk about what got you into politics and how is it, you know, now running a campaign at this level.
Well, first of all, Kamal, thank you so much for having me on the show. Vern, thank you as well for inviting me on this afternoon. I want to say, Kamal, congratulations on your race and the outcome.
Yeah, appreciate it.
I know that was a hard-fought campaign, yeah. And I'm going to try to follow your lead next year in taking back the 19th district.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at, Kamal, what you did here in Hudson and your candidacy as a young person from the community here who understands the issues, mm-hmm. on the grassroots level, understands what folks are going through, understands where this community has come from and where it could go. And that's what inspired me to want to get into this race. As a young person who was born and raised right here in the Hudson Valley, I was born in Kingston. I grew up working on a farm over in Ulster County. And growing up here, I know the challenges. I know the challenges of working class folks here in the district. I had the opportunity to go off to college, put myself through school, had the opportunity to work at the highest levels of state government here in New York State. I had the opportunity to go to Harvard Law School. And I'm doing something which not all young people are able to do up here in upstate New York, which is come home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to make sure that opportunity that I've had is available for other young folks growing up here in upstate New York, right here in our community.
What does that mean as far as coming home? Because I know a lot of the debate, especially at this level, has been people moving into certain cities to run for office. So when you being the guy that's homegrown, what advantage does that give you over other candidates? Or what do you want the people from your home to know of why they should choose you?
Absolutely. I think those of us who grew up here and who we have a unique perspective on the issues, we know what it's like. We know the challenges. But we also know the opportunities. We know how far our community has come. I remember coming to Hudson when I was much younger, driving down Warren Street, seeing all the plywood, seeing Hudson in a completely different way than Hudson is now. And I know our city here has come a long way back, but I also know we have a long way to go. And to me, what is so important and what I want to do in my race is make sure that as our economy has come back, as our city becomes a better and better place to live, that all folks here in Hudson are included as part of that. I see a divide here in Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
I see a difference in Hudson during the week and on the weekends. I want to make sure that the folks who've lived here in Hudson for years and years and years are a part of that economic recovery, that folks aren't getting priced out of their homes, that we make sure that there's the type of housing that can keep folks who have lived here for years able to still have opportunities in our city. That's so important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Will you do me a favor and talk about, let's go backwards to when you were in college. It says that when you were in college, you actually went to school on a Pell Grant. And I mean, a lot of us are familiar with Pell Grants,
mm-hmm.
and if you aren't, they're for low-income students and family and students and stuff like that. Can you speak on that? Because when you think of someone that, you know, worked with Governor Andrew Cuomo and stuff like that, you wouldn't think that, hey, this guy came and went to college, to CUNY College, on a Pell Grant.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Where I came from, growing up in a rural background here in upstate New York, I didn't have a lot, and going to college wasn't something that was expected of me. No one in my family had a four-year degree. I went out and after graduating from Kingston High School, I went out and got a job drilling water wells. So a lot of folks here in the Hudson Valley have water. That's how you get your water is from a well. I joined my local fire department. A lot of the folks I worked with said, Gareth, you're a young guy, you should go to college. I didn't know how I was going to pay for it, honestly. So I went online, I found out about Pell Grants, found out about some of this aid that the state gives me, and I got a scholarship, which got me through public university, and that was a great education. And if you look what's happening in Washington today, some of these budget initiatives that are being proposed, they want to actually take some of that away.
Mm-hmm.
They want to roll back Pell Grants, they want to roll back some of this aid to help students just like myself go to college. I think that's exactly the opposite of what should be happening.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. On a county level, Columbia County, how important is it for the people of Columbia County specifically to get out and vote in Greene County as well?
It's essential that everyone votes. I think that is this is what makes our democracy so special, is that everyone can have a voice. And my campaign, I'm running a completely different type of political campaign. Not different than yours, Kamal. I think actually I'm going to try to emulate the grassroots approach that you had. But there's 163 towns here in New York 19. We're a big congressional district. We touch four other states. It's bigger than Connecticut. It's bigger than Rhode Island. My strategy is I'm going to go to every single town in the district. I got an RV. It's a Winnebago. I'm going to every town. I'm talking to folks. I'm going to the diners, the firehouses, the farms, and just listening, just hearing what's on folks' minds, hearing what's going on, hearing the local issues, because I think it's so important. I think a member of Congress, it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican or independent, you should be there for all the people. You should be listening and then seeing what you can do down in Washington, take those voices to Washington, and try to bring something back for your community.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about your RV? Because someone actually posted a question and wanted to know more about your basically your traveling methods. Because they said something about you having an RV, but I had no clue. What that meant.
Actually, I was gonna ask him about it. I was gonna ask him how is the Winnebago going?
Yeah,
because it's on his page. Yeah, so I would like to know about it too.
I'm tired of the typical politician, which just wants to just send you some mail before the election, or they put some slick ad on TV. To me, I'm doing something completely different, which is I'm actually going to show up and talk to folks. And these are I've been out talking to people who completely disagree with me on every single issue. We sit down and we talk, we have a cup of coffee. And to me, that's the most valuable conversation, because I think just because you don't see eye to eye doesn't mean you can't walk hand in hand. And I think it's so important with all the partisanship and bickering going on down in Washington that we have folks who can reach across the aisle, who can work together. I think what makes something I love about this community is that in tough times, we've always come together. If I remember growing up when the Iraq War was proposed, our community stood up in New Paltz with Maurice Hinchey, who was our member of Congress. He was a voice against that when the entire Democratic Party was on board. Here in Hudson, when the cement factory was being proposed, folks stood up and rallied together. We've always stuck together when times are tough. And that's what I want my campaign to be about. Not about Democrats, not about Republicans, but about joining up as a community, that activism, that spirit of community, and taking that to Washington to fight for our future.
Look like we got a call.
Look like we got a caller.
All right, let's see what we got here.
Hello, caller, you're on the air?
Hey, this is Verity. I'm the one who asked the question about the RV.
Hey, Verity, hold on 1 second. We got to give you a clap, okay? Because we're thanking you for calling in.
No worries.
Verity, do me one favor, Verity. Just turn the radio down.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you're all set. You can answer.
Hey.
Hey.
Oh, hey. So, given that I heard you talking about my question.
Oh, so you just called in just to let us know.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. You had us confused.
So this is me. This is Verity.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for that question.
Yeah.
And thank you.
You had already asked about the RV, yeah.
Yeah, thank you for calling in.
You already got the good answer. Awesome.
Great.
Any other questions you might have?
Yeah, I also would really love to ask Garrett. I'm very, interested in the fact that his story resonates with me, you know, being a first-generation American myself and first one in my family to go to college. And, you know, I wonder how you reconcile that. I also, you know, went to Harvard, taught at Harvard, so probably around the time you were there, I was, there when you were in law school. So I'm wondering how you kind of bridge those worlds and this RV life that you've got going now.
I'm ready.
I really love that. I love your working class story and bringing it back to the people. But, you know, it's not the usual story. So I'd like to hear a little more about it.
Absolutely.
And turn him down some.
Oh, okay. He's all right. Absolutely. I think it's so important that to have someone in office like Kamal, like others who understand what it's like to be a working class person here in the Hudson Valley, because then you understand the issues that so many folks are going through. I know so many folks who are working two or three different jobs or struggling to pay for their health care. Mm-hmm. And then the moment anything goes wrong, you got to put up some sort of GoFundMe page on Facebook to pay for it, even though you're paying all this money for mm-hmm. health care. And if you look at what's happening in Washington, these bills that are being proposed right now is to take away everything we've been fighting for up to this point. And I think anyone who has a type of working class background knows that how much that's going to hurt folks, how much that's going to drive up their expenses. So many Americans and folks who I know here in this community, if anything goes...
I definitely agree. But what will your Harvard degree, like your law degree, do for us here? I hope it'll give you leverage, like once you're in office. But, you know...
I had the opportunity that, and I believe is the values that I was raised with in this community, hard work, looking out for my neighbor, which helped me, I believe, get into schools like Harvard, I went to a public college for college, CUNY.
Yep.
And I want to use that education, and I want to use those values to work for this community. When you grow up working on a farm, you have to wake up at 5 in the morning, you have to stay up late at night.
Oh, I know.
You work 7 days a week, all year round. I want to use that work ethic and those values to serve my community and fight day and night for us down in Washington. And I'll tell you, going to 163 towns, this district is 7,900 square miles. You put a lot of miles on the car going around. But I believe...
Well, I think we all love hard workers here, so thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you for calling in, Brady.
And again, well, I needed to know about that RV because I got pretty down. It was like a question for me.
Yeah.
Like, you're really going to drive that around like you're following the Grateful Dead, but you're running for politics?
No.
That was my question, you guys already covered it.
Yeah, thank you so much, and thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Yep.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead, Sully.
So, speaking of the campaign trail, you had an event, a bold event, that you pulled in Faso's hometown. Tell us why you pulled that event and the reception.
Absolutely. So, across the district in all the different towns we've been going to, folks have been of all political stripes have been so supportive of our effort because folks are a little scared right now, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
You see this tax bill that's going through right here in Columbia County. 8,000 people, if this tax bill actually passes, would see their taxes go up an average of $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
That is for folks who are struggling to make ends meet, that's a real blow. And we don't even know where our current member of Congress stands. The vote might happen tomorrow. He did a conference call last night, and no one knows where he stands on this bill. So our support has been all across the district, and when we went out to John Faso's hometown, we had almost 75 people show up, folks of Democrats, Republicans, all wanting to say, what can we do to get involved? How can we be a part of this campaign? And Kamal, what I'm so proud of is that my campaign has been a real grassroots effort. Mm-hmm. You know, these things are expensive. You got to put some gas in the RV. We have this $19 for New York 19 fundraising drive, which has fueled our campaign. Our campaign is 25th in the entire nation amongst Democratic challengers in that low dollar fundraising, because that's what I'm relying on for my campaign is the folks in this community, the middle class folks, the working class folks. That's who's fueling this effort, and I'm so proud of that.
Yeah, I would like to talk about some of the things that you're fighting for. You said that you're fighting for some things for us as a community and as in the county. And one of the things that caught my eye and I'd like you to explain is creating jobs in upstate New York. Can you talk about that, please?
Absolutely. So I think what challenge that we have faced as this our economy has come back here in upstate New York in some ways. I was born in Kingston. Kingston was an IBM town. 7,000 jobs left Kingston in the early 90s from IBM. But Kingston has come a long way back. And I think here in Hudson, we've seen our economy also a resurgence in the last 10 years or so. And I know that under our with all the folks we elected this past November, Kamal, our mayor, Rick Rector, that's going to keep going. But I think what's important is that we do more to help our young people who grow up here in this community. I know a lot of young folks who've graduated from our local high schools and our local public schools, and the best job they've been able to get is at the local mall, mm-hmm. and which is hard to make ends meet, working multiple jobs. And what I want to do is make sure that we have the type of environment that can attract entrepreneurs. I don't believe in government giving big subsidies to big corporations to come in. I want to have an environment where we bring in entrepreneurs. So I think that's about investing in broadband, investing in internet to bring companies here, mm-hmm. investing in cell phone service. You can't drive up the Taconic State Parkway and keep a conference call going. We have, you can take a cruise ship in the Caribbean and get better internet than you can in some parts of Columbia County. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure we're doing that. And also, part of that equation for me is if we want our young people to be able to stay here and work here, they have to be able to live here. And right. we've seen the how housing prices here in Hudson have skyrocketed, and folks are being squeezed. Mm-hmm. Folks who lived there for years are being squeezed by increasing rents, increasing property taxes in some areas, and that's a place that government can really have a role in affordable housing, not just low-income housing, but help for the middle class, help for renters, and help for folks who are seeing their property taxes get to a place where they can't stay in their homes.
I got another one. Mm-hmm. Come on. How about protecting our environment? That's big right now, and especially
it's
in this
huge.
Area, it's huge. And I know that you have some ideas on that.
Absolutely. So I was proud when I worked in the governor's office that we worked to ban fracking in New York State, and I have a personal experience with that because I was a water well driller, and I know how hard it is to find clean water. And I think across this district, when I talk to folks, when that's first things people tell me is the concern with water quality.
Mm-hmm.
We have such good water here in upstate New York, and making sure that it stays that way. And the environment, this community has such a strong support of our environment across party lines. You look at Representative Chris Gibson, a Republican member of Congress, who stood up for the environment when he was in Congress. Democrats, Congresswoman Gillibrand, when she was in Congress, now as a member of the Senate, we've had strong environmentalists because this community has such a great tradition. The Hudson River, across the river, the Catskill Mountains, the beautiful rural area here in Columbia County, heading out into the Berkshires of Massachusetts. You have such a beautiful environment here in upstate New York. And I remember when I was younger, I hiked almost every peak in the Catskill Mountains, and we had some serious acid rain problems. You couldn't go fishing in those lakes and streams, mm-hmm. and you could trace that to the pollution coming from the western part of the country. Government got its act together, passed the Clean Air Act, put some regulations on those power plants, and it really fixed the problem. Right now, they're trying to roll that back, and it's something that deeply, deeply concerns me because I grew up here with asthma, and I know we used to have some of the worst childhood asthma rates here in the Hudson Valley.
Mm-hmm.
We have to fight tooth and nail to make sure that those protections don't get rolled back, and that's what I'm going to be fighting for when I'm in Congress, because not just we got to maintain the beauty that we fought for. We're such a beautiful region. It's why people want to live here and move here. And it's also a public health issue with the air quality.
Speaking of that, and I'll piggyback it, if you don't mind, protecting health care and social safety net. And you're talking about health issues and stuff like that. Health care is probably one of the things that I'm sure the majority of this area is really worried about. Would you talk about that?
Absolutely. And I know what it's like to live without health insurance because when I was working after high school here and considering going to college, I lost my health insurance when I left my well drilling job to go to college because I couldn't get health insurance through the school. And I was a young, healthy guy, so everything turned out okay. But for a lot of folks aren't in that position. The Affordable Care Act, it gave a pathway to letting so many folks here in upstate New York get health care. 65,000 people right here in New York 19, we're able to access affordable health care because of the Affordable Care Act. Now, I know there's plenty of problems with our health care system still. It costs far too much for the average working family to afford health care.
Mm-hmm.
Our small businesses are drowning in these costs. They cannot afford the increasing cost of health care. And we have to, I believe, in Congress, make sure that we fix this health care system for once and for all. Almost every other developed nation is doing this better than us. We spend 18% of our economy on healthcare. We're 37th in results. The average American spends $10,000 a year on private health insurance. Other countries, that's half, and they get better results. So I'm going to fight for a system that's more affordable. We're already spending so much money on this. So it's not like I think there's a lot of fear out there that taxes will have to go up. I don't believe that's true. I think we're already spending the money, and we can have I do believe, though, Vernon Kamel, that as long as the healthcare system is about profits, not people, we will always have this problem that we have now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So you want to take a break?
Yeah, yeah. Let's go into a break, and then we'll have more.
Yeah. Okay, we'll be right back. How about some Claire? Let's Claire Cousins. We need this right here. We'll be right back.
Yeah, yeah.
We are back. You are now listening to the Drive Time Radio Show on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, Catskill. Slay Diddy, will you please continue this absolutely amazing interview? I mean, I'm learning a lot, and most of the interviews that we get a chance to do, we know a lot about the people.
Yeah.
But to actually be able to sit here, I do have one question before you go.
Mm-hmm.
If you are elected, what would be your duties? Because I don't know, like, that's the one thing that always confuses me about politics. Like, what are your, because I don't want to ask you a question that you might not be able to deal with, and you might have to send me somewhere else. So what mm-hmm. would be your duties for that seat?
Absolutely. So a lot, some folks think that a member of Congress, your only job is to go down to Washington and take votes, and that's, I think, what we see some members of Congress do. Mm-hmm. For me, it's so much more than that. You are a spokesperson for the community. You are someone who should be fighting day and night to make sure that the things that are going here in the community are being promoted. Folks know about the events that are happening here, our street festivals. You're a member, real member of the community, and also helping folks here with the various issues in your daily life. If you have an issue, if a small business owner has an issue with a regulation or trying to figure out how to get something done, I want them to call me on my cell phone. And one of the advantages I have in this race is I have government experience right here in New York State. I worked in the governor's office. I have a lot of connections in state government where I can pick up the phone and call folks on the state level. And if so, a lot of these issues, they're not just federal issues. They're state issues. They're town issues. They're county issues. And having someone who knows how to work with government and knows the players in government, I think, is very important. So if you have an issue here at the radio station or something's going on and you need to give me a call, I'll be right there so I can make sure that I can do everything I can to help.
Slay?
Great. So, one of the questions that we got also was there's the whole campaign is to unseat, you know, Faso. Like, it sounds like a movie title. But where did he go wrong? I mean, we can all, you know, give you different examples, but in your opinion, where did he go wrong?
I think from almost the first vote he took, which is the vote to allow coal waste into streams, mm-hmm. was a vote that showed that he didn't get why the environment is so important to community, to folks in this community. He didn't share the same values that our community shared. And then we saw it time after time, the refusal to hold a town hall meeting, the refusal to go out and talk to folks and listen to what our concerns are, which then just then led to this vote on this disastrous Trump care bill that made its way through the House. Mm-hmm. There were Republicans that voted against this bill in the Budget Committee, but he voted for it. That bill got to the House floor. He got up there and said that he told one of the constituents right here in Columbia County that he wasn't going to vote, that he promised not to take a vote to take away her health care, got on the House floor and voted for it. He broke the promise that he made. He, time after time, has turned his back on the community. And I think for so many of us here, that hurts because we've had representatives on both sides of the aisle, mm-hmm. Chris Gibson, Congresswoman Gillibrand, others who, when they were our member of Congress, didn't matter what party they were from, they stood up for our issues. They stood up for what we cared about. They shared our values. And from day one, John Faso's been the opposite of that. He's been with Trump on almost 90% of the issues. And I think that hurts our community.
Now, one of the big things that's going on in our county, along with every county basically in the nation, is this opioid epidemic. What's your stance or ideals or, you know, your basically, what are your thoughts on this epidemic and how can we kind of not necessarily stop it completely, but how can we gain control so that eventually it can be stopped?
This is such a heartbreaking and tragic and complex issue that is facing so many families here in Columbia County in the Hudson Valley. And I'll tell you, Kamal, I remember when I was a volunteer firefighter, so many of our calls were for putting out fires or for car accidents, these things. Nowadays, you talk to folks on the fire departments and the ambulance service, so much of it is someone overdosed and you're getting out there to try to save a life. And we have, government has to get involved here, but this is also even more than a government problem. And here in Columbia County, Sheriff Peter Volkman, who's a sheriff up in Chatham, who recently lost a tough race here for Columbia County Sheriff, has really put forward a very smart and innovative program to help with a community-based initiative, making sure that folks who need treatment aren't scared away from seeking treatment, making sure that law enforcement, the community, the health providers are all part of the solution. And I think, Kamal, when I was reading a little bit about your candidacy here for in Ward 1, what I really liked about your approach was a community-based approach. Mm-hmm. It was you were someone who recognized that government has to be part of the solution, but it's not the full part of the solution. And when I look at our opioid crisis, I see a lot that government can do. It's in funding, making sure folks have access to the methadone clinics, making sure that we're changing the way we treat pain, changing the access to these painkillers and these dangerous drugs. But I also see a real role for the community, our schools, our churches, our community institutions, in playing a role to make sure that folks who might be heading on this path don't, and make sure that folks who have headed on this path have the resources and the tools and the helping hand they need to get out of it.
Let's go back to the topics that we were talking about before. One of them was investing in our schools. Obviously, we talked previously about you going to, you know, a state school and stuff like that. But I'm thinking more of like into our high schools. I might be wrong, but investing into our schools, maybe both. But can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. I think our public high schools, our public elementary schools, our public middle schools here in our community, these are really where so much of the good work is done in terms of making sure that our young people have the kind of foundation they need so when they become adults, they can become successful in their careers, whatever they choose to pursue. I'm a proud Kingston High School graduate. I think funding is critical for our schools to make sure that we're attracting top quality teachers, that our teachers can that is a profession that folks can afford to do. There's right now, if you look at some of the proposals in Washington, taking away some of the tax credits or the tax write-offs that teachers get when they purchase supplies for their students. I talk to a lot of parents now who say their students come home from school with this huge list of things that they have to bring to school with them the next day, which is a sign that our schools are really underfunded. I want to fight in Washington to make sure that if you look at what the state can do and what the federal government can do, so much of public school funding is on the state level. But on the federal government, you can help with programs such as after-school programs. You can help with making sure that teachers aren't dipping into their limited bank accounts to fund education. Teachers do so much for our students, and teachers work so hard, and making sure that they're not going bankrupt to help a student have the supplies that they need. And I really do believe that if we can help our public schools and our community, it will make such a big difference on so many different areas, the opioid epidemic, for jobs in the community, for improving our local economy. I think the schools are right at the heart of almost each of these issues.
Yeah. This one right here, this was one that kind of opened my eyes wide, and I wanted to ask you it first, but I wanted to stay on my path because there's one part of this question that I didn't know about, and hopefully you'll explain it. The one is fighting income inequality, but the other part is dark money in politics. What is dark money in politics?
We've seen across the nation, we've seen since the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, we've seen a flood of millionaires, billionaires, massive corporations using their wealth to influence elections on all levels.
Okay.
Here in the Hudson Valley, at Westchester County, in the county executive's race this past November, Robert Mercer, a hedge fund founder, put $1 million into that race of his own money to try to influence the outcome. The deck in these elections is being stacked against working folks. It's being stacked against the average citizen. That's why my campaign is directed at the grassroots. It's $19 for New York 19. I've collected hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those donations from folks here in the community. And I believe that's the only way to combat it. If I wrote myself a check, it would probably bounce. My parents haven't given me a penny. I don't come from limited means, and the only way I can do it is by relying on the folks here in the community. And when I go to Washington, I think it's so important that I will fight to make sure we take that dark money out of politics, because I think too often politicians are influenced by who gives the money, by who is the loudest voice in their ear in terms of financial donations. And I think if you look at some of John Faso's votes, I get folks all over the community who say, why did he vote for that bill? It's taking 65,000 people here in the community off of their health insurance plan. Why on earth would he vote for it? I think the only explanation is, look at who his donors are. Look at who's giving him money. That's almost a tenth of your constituents to vote against that. There's no other political explanation for that, right?
Right, yeah. I agree.
So another hot topic is Planned Parenthood. Yeah. And it being defunded, the fear of people losing jobs and potential healthcare benefits. Where do you stand on Planned Parenthood?
I would never vote to defund Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood plays a vital role in so many of our communities in making sure that women and men have access to vital healthcare services. When Mr. Faso was running for office, he promised that he would not vote to defund Planned Parenthood. He did it not once but twice, broken promises time after time. I believe that Planned Parenthood plays a important role in so many of our communities in providing affordable health care to folks who may not be able to afford it elsewhere. And I think it's incredibly important that we ensure that we're moving in a direction where health care from Planned Parenthood, from other providers, is affordable to folks, because so many people are going bankrupt, having to rely on credit cards, going into personal debt to pay for healthcare expenses. It's a huge problem, and I think we need to be moving in a direction where we're making it more affordable, not less.
Hot topics. Let's stay on them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm on the hot seat.
Yeah. Sensible immigration policies. That is a very hot topic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to try to explain it. I'm just going to let you have it, because it's one of those things that especially in our county right now, it's a really, really big topic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think this issue has so many different components to it. I'll tell you one thing, that growing up here on a farm, I hear from farmers all across the district that this immigration, anti-immigration rhetoric coming out of Washington has hurt their bottom line. Because a lot of the farms here rely on seasonal labor.
Yeah.
A lot of our farms are vegetable farms, apple farms. If you can't get the folks who have been coming here for 10, 20, 30 years, these families who know the farms sometimes better than the farmers themselves, mm-hmm. coming here, and if they can't come during the harvest season, your crops are going to wither on the vine. You're going to go bankrupt. I think it's so important that we fix what's been going on down in Washington. And we've had proposals that have passed the Senate. We had a proposal that passed the Senate in 2013, bipartisan immigration bill, support from both sides of the aisle, and it died in the House of Representatives. We have the common sense solutions here on the table to make sure that our immigration system is both smart but also fair, making sure that folks who've been on some of these waiting lists for years and years and years get the treatment that they deserve, and also making sure that we're keeping folks who shouldn't be in the country out of the country. There is a sensible way of doing this, and that's what I'm going to fight for in Washington, as opposed to this just hateful and toxic rhetoric, which is both harms our community but also hurts our economy.
We're on hot topics. We might as well stay on the hot seat. So one thing I noticed at the forum and seeing all the candidates, there's six of you guys, right?
Yes.
So one big thing that's a glaring is they're all men. So where do you stand on a lot of issues about women's rights, because there is no female representative, you know, kind of running for the seat or anything like that? It's all men.
Absolutely. And I think what we saw on this on election day this year, mm-hmm. is across New York 19, it was women candidates who were leading the charge and won these tough seats. Here mm-hmm. in Columbia County, Dr. Cricket Coleman winning her seat. In Dutchess County, Robin Lois becoming a comptroller.
Mm-hmm.
Andrea Smith in Rensselaer County coming just a couple hundred votes shy of winning that tough race. And then on the county legislative and local races, women winning these tough, tough races. And I think it's so important that the member of Congress, this community, is standing up in Washington for women's rights. And I have a history of public service in this state, in this community, of doing just that. I fought when I was in Albany to try to codify Roe v. Wade into state law, mm-hmm. to make sure that no matter what the Supreme Court does, a woman will always have the right to make her own healthcare decisions. I believe when you see what's happening nationwide, I think, I read that story the other day about what's happening in Congress with all these various sexual harassment claims. Mm-hmm. It's so important that us men are outspoken in our daily lives to make sure that we're standing up and being a voice when anything like that we see around us is happening, to making sure that we're standing up for the women in our lives and saying absolutely not. This type of language, this type of harassment, this type of activity has no place in our society.
We got a call.
Yeah.
Caller, you're on the air.
Big Bird.
Hey, what's up, Quinn? Hold on 1 second, Quinn. Let me give you the clap.
Quinn!
Hey, Slade. Hey.
How you doing, Quinn?
Good. That's why you guys are number one in my eyesight.
Thank you, Quinn.
Thank you. I agree
with you. Guys, you and State Day are the best.
Thank you, sir.
Out of all the programmers, you guys are fantastic, okay?
Yes, sir.
Today's guest, fantastic.
He appreciates it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? I mean, there's nobody better than Big Bird and State Diddy. You know? I mean, you guys are better than the mail service, okay?
Not the mail service, no.
And have a good day, okay?
All right, Quinn.
Quinn out.
Quinn out.
Quinn
Thanks,
out.
Quinn.
You do, too. All right, take care, Quinn. Let me give him a clap on the way out, Slay.
Quinn out. Oh, man. Quinn is so, he's our guy, man.
Yeah, where you want to explain?
That was the easiest question I got all show.
Quinn's our guy. He listens to us faithfully. We have a couple people that do, but he calls in. And if we were doing something wrong, or if he didn't like what you were saying, or if he didn't believe in it, he would say so.
Yeah.
So he calls in every show, and he'll say, The guest is great. I like that guest, and
he has the same. Listen, that guest isn't so great.
and then he'll say Quinn out. He's a part of the show.
And then he just leaves.
Yeah, just goes. So.
Yeah, it started when I was actually campaigning. I was listening in, and he would call randomly, and he would just say his thoughts on the show, and then Quinn out. So I couldn't wait to get back just to hear that.
but it is a good sign because, you know, when we have our people listening and they mm-hmm. approve of what we're doing, and this interview for me, it was very enlightening. I'm happy about it. The one thing that I did read and I liked about you, that you seem to be the kind of in your face, I'm not afraid to say your name type of candidate. And I respect that. Like a lot of candidates, they kind of stray away from that because, I mean, Faso, he's on another level right now. But, mm-hmm. I mean, even Trump, I read things where you said that we need new leaders and people that's going to stand up to Trump. Like for you to say that, like, I respect that. And I want to thank you. I want to give you the clap because I was like, hey, this guy's all right, man. You know, I know what I'm going to do when it's time to vote, you know, mm-hmm. so. Let me give you the clap for that because that was a bold statement, and I enjoyed every bit of it. Yeah. So.
Well, thanks, Vern. Thank you very much.
You gotta let it go.
Yeah, enjoy that. Enjoy.
Yeah.
That.
You gotta take the clap in. You gotta let it marinate.
Well, okay. Thank you, Vern, very much for you and Kamal to have me on this show. And what I love about this program is that it's community radio.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about the issues of the community. I think you give folks a voice here in the community. And I think that's so important. I think right now the First Amendment is under attack.
Mm-hmm.
We have folks who say the media lies, the media does this, does that.
Fake news.
Fake news. And to give folks a voice, I think, and the fact is, and you give everyone a voice. I know mm-hmm. you've had invitations to Mr. Faso to come on. You've had invitations to whoever to come on. And I think that's so important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running a campaign I'm a part of this community. I'm one of this community. I don't think politicians should be some class of their own. They should be normal people. Working class people who anyone can just call, pick up the phone, call on their cell phone, talk about the issues, hear where they stand. We're not going to agree on everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you agree with me on 50% of the issues, I'm happy. If you agree with me on 100% of the issues, I think you're probably insane. So I think that's how we have to do it and stay as one community. And I appreciate so much that the time you took to invite me on the show and the amount of work that each of you has put into this show. And Kamal, I want to say congratulations again to you on your victory. I know the first ward is in very good hands with your leadership.
Yeah, I can't wait. You know, January 1st.
Yeah.
It's official.
We're all excited.
Yeah.
Gareth, do me a favor and just give your last, not the last, because we want to have you back. And
mm-hmm.
and Kamal will tell you, we have an open door policy here for guests like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you think it's time that you want to just come in and sit down with us, or if you can't get in and you want to call us, and you can call us and be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But just tell our listeners why, come next year, why they should vote for you, and how to find out more information about yourself.
Absolutely. I've asked folks to vote for me because I believe this community's best days are still ahead. We've come so far, we've done so much good work, but there's still more to do. And I will stand up as Washington tries to raise our taxes, I will stand up against that. As Washington tries to take away our health care, I will stand up against that. I will fight for lower taxes, more affordable health care, and for the future of this community, and I want to do it together with everyone. And to learn more about me, you can visit my website, www.garethrhodes.com, GARETHRHODES.com. You can send me a message right there. It comes directly to me. I get that message, and I'll probably just give you a call. And I want to be in touch with whoever is interested in my campaign. And then I'll be going to every community in this district. So let me know what town you're in. When I'm in your town, I'll send you a note, and I'll buy you a cup of coffee at the local diner.
Sweet. Yeah. Anything else, Lane?
You know, just thanks for coming on. I think that you kind of hit everything that we wanted to know. I think the listeners got a good glimpse of who you are as a candidate. Shout out to everyone who called in, Verity, for great questions. And, you know, it's next year we have a big choice, so we got to make sure we're informed on that choice.